and that you would speak to your people, and that we would have ears to hear and feet that are quick to obey. And we thank you, Lord, for all you're going to do among us, because you will do great things among us. Mm. These things we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. That is live. All right. So this is kind of fun, you know, like we start worship and there's like a handful of people, then it like fills up, and then we do pass the peace and it, like we lose all our kids. So it's kind of this funny little breathing sort of thing. Very cool. So some of you guys were not here last week. How many of you guys know we're going through the book of Joshua? Just kind of a little bit. Yeah, so there's going to be some catching up I need to do. I'll do the best I can. If I like skip too fast, you might tell me, because I might try to go fast. Because I'm a little self-conscious, I don't know if you know this, but if you were here last week, show of hands, yeah, I blamed you all for how late we were in here, okay? So we do this passing of the peace, and we go out and do the thing, and, you know, grab some coffee, and, you know, bless each other, and it's part of our worship, that's part of the deal. But then sometimes we get into our conversations and we linger and we hang out and all that kind of stuff. And I was like getting up here and I'm like preaching and I'm doing the thing and I look and I'm like, oh man, it's like quarter till. My wife's in the back. She's all, it's like time. People are getting restless. They're going to their break, all that. You can always go to get a break. It's not a big deal. But it's just like you notice when like 10 people go, you're thinking, And so anyway, I'm feeling a little self-conscious, but then I'm like, man, they really did pass the peace long. Yeah, so I listened to the sermon, and yes, it was 57 minutes, 57. And I didn't finish it because, you know, I can only do 45. So maybe Rick left it on a little bit, so we'll maybe it wasn't quite. No, it was all the way through 57. Thank you. So feedback's good. Feedback's good. But it was fun to do, and I really enjoy. I've been really loving going through the book of Joshua and just digging into it. And, you know, sometimes when you feel unsettled about something, it's good to kind of go again. So those of you that thought Marquita or somebody else was going to go this week, sorry in advance, because here I am and I'm going to go because I want to, you know, I felt a little undone and I want to keep going. So, but, you know, you get the feedback. Community's good for that, isn't it? Community sort of, you know, we get together and we sort of sharpen each other. And that's all fun and games to say that until what, right? It actually is happening. You know, when you're the anvil and, you know, God's the hammer and one of us is on the thing, you know, and it's like, yeah, our sparks start flying, forming, you know, this stuff isn't, they use that analogy for a reason, right? Forming and fashioning metal. Can you imagine, let's say you're the anvil, which you got to be over the summer. How many of you guys know Mariah got to stay at our house all summer? All summer. I mean, yeah. But she gets to be, you know, and then so now we find out Brad's moods when he's not in front of other people, which I think I've been pretty much consistent with you guys. Yeah, I know. I see you kind of, you're not nodding, but I can see it behind those eyes that are locked in. So anyway, the point is I get feedback. My son gives me feedback all the time. Yesterday was one of those great moments, you know. We're talking, Allie and I, very calm conversation. Let me go back a week. Okay, so we're in the bedroom, not as calm, maybe, in our conversation. And he comes, he doesn't come through our door. He goes all the way around the house and comes in through the back door, lands in the bed. Remember, he's got his little leg, right? So he's, and just plops himself in the middle of the bed. And we're trying to talk, but, you know, being in control. And so he grabs the hanger and hands it to mommy and goes, you can't talk till she's done, till you get the hanger. And then she was done and he hands me the hanger and then she tried to talk and he's like, nope. Dad's got the hanger, right? So he's got it. So yesterday we had just a miscommunication. It wasn't that big of a deal, right? So, but you know, we're kind of talking it through and he's like, be nice, be nice, be nice. I'm being nice. He goes, no, you're not. And I'm like, ugh, and I just go to the other room, right? Like, I don't need this kind of feedback in my life, do I, right? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I was thinking about, you know, just in blaming, you know, we're kind of thinking like Marquita, right? Like, she's got her home. She's got her domain. If she gets frustrated, what? Is she going to blame the cat for his bad move, right? You know? Yeah, so they do their own thing, right? So there's these feedback loops that we all get to have in our lives, and they're each other. And that's both a blessing and a curse. And I mean that both literally and literally. I'm good for that kind of stuff too. But the thing is, what's important is that we stay in it, whether it's the blessing or the curse. I think about a lot of times, so you guys know, if you live over by 17th Street, 17th and Pomona, there's this, I've talked about this before, but there's this little Porsche dealership, or it's not a dealership, but they build a Porsche in front of your eyes over time, because I do loops. Some of you guys know I'm a driving instructor, so I teach people how to drive, so I have to go in circles a lot, or squares, whatever you want to call it. Sometimes they're circles, roundabouts, but anyway, the point is, we go by there and they'll have this complete just shell of a car that looks sort of like a Porsche from, they do the 1960s, so it's like, you know, they do it retro. And then you drive by another time and it's got primer on it, another time it starts getting different things and then wheels and eventually, and then outside they've got three or four of them for sale that I can't afford. But portions, yeah, you get to wash, yeah. I'm not, something like that. But you get to see it built is what I'm trying to go with. And the thing is, can you just imagine if the Porsche had a will and just decided that it was done being worked on and just jumped off that thing and, you know, how good is that car going to work? You know, like, if we get off the operating table when God is working with us, when he brings us into a community, when he's working on us and bringing stuff to life in us, if we jump off too early, you know, I just imagine Ian, you guys know, a lot of you, he got his knee busted up and he was in surgery for like 3 or 4 hours. And, you know, if I went in, I'm done, 2 hours into it, we're going home, right? That'd be ridiculous. You would think I'm an idiot. But we do that with our lives, don't we? We jump off so often. God turns the heat up on us, and we're not comfortable with it. Could be as simple as we're driving down the road, and we get a flat tire. You know what I'm saying? And then you're frustrated, and you pull over, and you're, like, angry and frustrated, and you start whatever you do when that happens. Instead of just what? Call AAA, or call a friend, or maybe even get out and actually pull the jack out of your car, and, you know, you have a manual in there that tells you how to do this, I promise. And you can pull the tire off and fix it, you know, and it'll get going in its way. But we do, don't we? We complain about the things that get in our way. We get frustrated, and we get angry, and we spend a lot of time in that cycle, spinning and spinning and spinning. You guys know Bob Newhart? Yes. Bob Newhart? I love that guy. First of all, he's got a great one on driving school, if you ever want to look that one up. That's sort of off to the side. It's really funny. It's like from the 60s. Not politically correct, so I'll just warn you on that if you do listen to it, but it's funny. And if you just want to take his impolitical, is that a word? His non-political words and just insert teenager. Is there any teenagers in here? Just do this, just do this. Just like blah, 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 blah. So if you just, for the teenagers and stuff, you could just, you know, insert the teen, I'm just kidding. So anyway, all of us have these funny things when we approach something, trying to learn how to do it. And you get going in something. And I have to say this a lot to my driving students is, let's commit to the process. You got to commit to your decision and see what happens. And even if it's wrong, we'll get through it. Even the aggressive driver that commits, we all get out of his way, don't we? And he at least lives. It's the timid one that gets stuck in the middle and, I don't know whether I should do this or not. Well, anyway, Bob Newhart talks about a thing, and he does this little skit where he's a therapist. Anybody seen that one? Where he's a therapist? Okay. So he has this, you know, he comes in and, you know, everybody claps and stuff. And the person comes in and he goes, sits down with her and he's recommended. Goes, I charge $1 a minute. But I got to tell you that up to $5. And usually we don't go the full 5 minutes. Right? And I don't make change. So she starts to go into her the problem, and you know, I have this phobia. I'm afraid. I go around all the time. I'm petrified because I'm afraid of somebody burying me alive in a box. He goes, okay. Well, that it? Anything else you want to tell me? No, that's it. That's my phobia. Okay. Well, I'm going to give you two words, and you know, we'll be pretty much done with our session. It takes about that long, right? And she gets her pen and paper out, and he goes, I don't know, most people don't need to write it down, but if you feel more comfortable, you know, two words. He goes, stop it. Just stop being afraid of those. And she's all offended. What are you talking about, right? Like, there's got to be more to it. And so she goes, but when I was a kid and this and that. And he goes, stop it. We don't go there. Just stop it. And then she's like, And they kind of talk a little bit. And at some point, he goes to pay. You know, do you want to pay? And she's like, no, I want to use the rest of the 5 minutes. All I got is a $5 bill, and you don't make change, right? So she starts to try and go into a little bit more, and he's, okay, so he's there. And then she goes, well, my mother. And he goes, nope, definitely don't go there. And then he starts going off on, well, the astrology. He goes, we absolutely don't go there. You know, we're not going to any of these little places where we like to, you know, take our problems, and we start to diffuse them all over the place. And he's just like, nope, just stop it. And there's an element to that that's funny, but there's also an element that there is a history in our lives that get us conditioned to be a certain way, don't they? And what we forget, and this is one of the things I talk to my students about when they're having a hard time driving, is, and I'll just ask you guys, how long did it take you to learn to walk? Anybody? Don't remember. Probably, you know, give or take a year. I'm sorry, a year, give or take a couple months, right? Like, learning to walk didn't happen overnight. And driving a car, usually we can get that down a little bit. My favorite is, you know, it's not you I'm worried about. It's all the other drivers. Except for I'm wondering where they're going to drive. It's the other drivers that you need to learn how to drive around that cause the problems, right? We, again, have that feedback loop and have that thing where we have to work with each other. But just stop it is that simple, but it's not that easy. I'm going to say that again. Just stopping our difficulties, our struggles, all the things that we deal with might be that simple, but it's not that easy. If you have a Bible, we're going to turn to Joshua chapter 7. And I just want to recap a little bit from last couple of weeks. Watching, I don't know if you guys watch college football, you know how they're, well, we'll get to that in a second. Come back to that. Go to chapter 7. Let's do it this way. How about give me a little bit of a recap? Who remembers what we read? What's the beginning of this? What's the situation we find ourselves in? What happened in chapter 6? Let's start there. Anybody? Jericho. And what happened at Jericho? They defeated Jericho. How? How did they defeat Jericho? Or maybe a better way of saying it, who defeated Jericho? How did he accomplish this task? What's that? Through his people, specifically? Yes, ma'am? They're going to shout. The wall's going to come down. So he has them go around one time, one day, then they go back to the camp, then they go around the next day, go back to the camp. They're supposed to be silent. They're watching. It's very, you know, like radio discipline, cut the chatter, right? And so they go around and around, and then on the seventh day, they go around seven times. Is it seven times? And then Joshua gives the command. The walls come tumbling down, right? And God has the victory. God wins the battle. And they did very little, we'll say, right? Like, it's today, how much did we really do in worship? Yeah, you know, but we got the opportunity to move mountains, and we didn't see. We got the opportunity to declare victories and to declare God's sovereign reign in ways that we may never, ever know, but we just, by singing and praising and being grateful and jumping up and down and waving those things around. Yeah? So that's cool. A little bit of work. God does a lot with that. So, anyway, so that's chapter 6. Then we get into chapter... What were the people supposed to do? They're supposed to go in there, kill everybody, and not touch anything, right? But we have a friend. His name is? Achan. And Achan is causing some Achan for the Jerusalem, or for the Israelites. So what does he do? He covets. It says very clearly that he coveted. He saw some goods. He wanted to keep them. He takes them, buries the silver down deeper. He's got his gold, whatever else he took in that. And that was whose prize? Who's supposed to get the victory or the spoils of war? The victor does, right? The victor gets it. In this case, we made it very clear that it was God that did the victory. So it's all God's. First fruits go to God. But Achan decided he wanted to do something else with his, so he takes it, buries it underneath there. And so in chapter 7, it starts off talking about how these guys are going to go into battle, and they go up and they spy out the land. They are assuming that God is still with them, and they're going to charge this thing. And they even say, we're not going to take as many people, right? So we don't need to take as many people. We're going to go in the land to the next city, which is named what? Anybody remember? There's another name for it. Does anybody remember? It's the ruin. The ruin. It's possibly a city that was built in among the ruins. It's just a side note. It's not that important. But the point is there's this little city that they're going to take, and they have this confidence that God's going to be with them. But as the reader, we know something different. What do we know? Achan. Achan messed things up. And because of that, their confidence. So they go into this battle. And I made a mistake last week. Tim kind of pointed it out. But it's kind of a way of saying that they were losing, right? They didn't run before they were losing. I made a very clear point. No, they ran before they were losing. And they lost, and that's why they were running. And then they ended up getting, I think, 36 of them killed over this deal. And the thing that stands out to me, and this is the curse of a community, is our sin isn't in a vacuum, is it? What we do, we think we do these private things over here. I'm just going to covet. I'm going to hold this. I'm going to withhold from God. And it's not going to affect any of you guys. And what this passage says is that's not true at all. Any of you guys that know, especially in families, tons of stories in this room about how family sin is just wrecks an entire experience for all the siblings and all of the parents. And, you know, it just can just wreck through all of the things. And it causes damage throughout. And the passage here shows us very clearly that Achan's sin had repercussions across the board. So then they go, and Joshua, he gets down on his face, and he goes to the right place. We're all confident that going to God is the right thing. And sticking with it and wrestling with it, getting into whatever, you know, he gets low, he puts his the ashes on, the elders are there. The problem was what? What was the one thing he did that he should not have done in that process? Who did he blame for this? He blamed God, didn't he? Why did you not just, why can't we just be content staying over on the other side of the river? Right? We get our dreams in our lives, and we get this calling of God. I wanted to write a Facebook post this week, and I don't know that I want to actually do this, but my one thought was, what if Moses just simply didn't get curious about that bush? How much easier could his life have been, right? Like, I don't want to be curious about that bush, because that changed everything, right? We used to call our youth group, when I was the youth pastor, we called it wrecked, because when you encounter God, he wrecks your life. Changes everything. There's a parable in the New Testament that says, you know, Jesus is talking and he says, if you plant the weed into your garden, it's going to grow. Like the mustard seed, it's a weed. You guys know that, right? You plant your seed into the garden and it's going to grow and be the biggest thing and be the, you know, where it's going to house all the birds and all this other kind of stuff. And if you're a farmer sitting there going like, wait a minute, you're going to plant a weed in the garden? Why would you do that? But that's God, right? He gets in there and it infests and turns everything upside down and just changes everything in your life, right? So anyway, Moses looked at the bush, changed his life forever. Joshua, of course, follows in his footsteps. He leads him into the promised land, but he doesn't learn the lesson because he's sitting there pouting before God going, why couldn't we have just been happy with the small little thing that you gave us? We don't want the big dream. When you start stepping into your big dream, what happens? Trouble, right? You start investing in it. You start having all kinds of manner of evil come against you. And that's both literal and stuff that just sort of we make up. When you try to grow, when you make a decision for Christ, when you make a decision to step into something, your life is going to be messed up a little bit because things can't stay the same. You can't do it. You get married and you try and stay single. Good luck with that. Yeah, no way. So anyway, so Joshua has this thing. God says, oh, I love this part too. He says, because of what is everybody going to think of your great name? Right? Just kind of throws that out there. And God's next words are basically, I'm going to paraphrase, but I'm okay with my name. I got this. I'm okay. It's you that needs to figure this out, right? It's you that needs to find the sin and get it. And so they went in and they did this little lot system. They kind of cast lots and this little lottery, and it fell on a tribe and then a family and then landed eventually on Achan. And what did they do with Achan? They just killed him. Boom. Okay. He comes up. They say, what did you do? Confess your sin. Well, I coveted and I stole the property. Okay. Good. Well, shouldn't have done that. Why did you bring this trouble on us? And they take him out and they kill him. And it's over with. And there's this monument that they have there, the Valley of Trouble, I think they called it. So that's the recap for 7. Valley of Anchor. Does anybody have that? What is that? Yeah, Valley of Trouble. At the last verse in chapter 7. So, the football game. You're losing in the first half. Every time you run the ball, you get smacked and pummeled. Every single time. So you go into halftime, and what do? You make an adjustment, right? Something's not working. You do, what's the definition of insanity? Yeah, so you got to do something different. Just stop it, right? So what did they do? How did they stop it? What was their adjustment? We just said it. They kill Achan. That's it. They get the sin out of the camp. We get a little bit flinchy on that, don't we? We get a little bit, it's hard to steel our nerves, especially when we read these passages. You got to remember that Joshua, although it's history, but it was compiled a good 700 years later. And it was done for a reason. These people were given the land, the promise, the milk and honey, everything they wanted. This was awesome. They're stepping into it. But then they blow it, and you all know about Babylon coming in, and they take them and stuff. And so now they're kind of compiling. How should the history go? How then should we live? We should live and honor God. We should not do these things. We should not harbor sin in our hearts. So we read this even now, 2019. We can look back and go, yeah, this is very relevant to us. Yeah? Doesn't matter exactly how true the history it is. Some of that is important and relevant, and we can kind of get into that. But does it matter about the cherry tree when George Washington cut down the cherry tree? Does it matter exactly what that cherry tree was and exactly how that worked? No, the story is about don't lie, right? That's the cherry tree thing. The boy who cried wolf. Does there have to be an actual boy who cried wolf somewhere? There might have been. But the point is don't lie. Don't pretend something is one way when it's not, because when reality comes, it's going to change things, right? Does that make sense? Am I tracking? Okay, over-explaining again? I get it. All right, chapter 8, verse 1. Then the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear or be dismayed. Take up your fighting men with you and go now into Ai. See, I have handed over to you the king of Ai with his people and his city and his land. And you shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king. Only its spoils and its livestock you may take as booty for yourselves. Isn't that awesome? God has made provision for us, and he invites us into that. We don't have to take our own and steal our own. God has plenty, plenty to give us. If Achan would have just waited, not only would it have saved those 36 people's lives, right? But he would have had more than his share. So God said, set an ambush. The other thing is who's talking? This is the one voice that was missing in chapter 7, by the way, in the beginning. Not that it says definitively that they lost because they didn't seek the Lord on it, but I want to point out that this is a covenant relationship. This is not just God doing the work for us. This is a partnership that he invites us into. Yes, God did destroy Jericho, but he invited his people to be a part of that conquest. He invites you and me to be a part of his world. Does he need us? No. Does he want us to be a part of it? Absolutely. So set out ambush against the city, behind it. Verse 3, Joshua and all the fighting men set up and to go against it to Ai. Joshua chose 30,000 warriors and sent them out by night with the command, you shall lie in ambush against the city. Behind it, do not go very far from the city, but all you stay alert. I and all the people, it's confusing, I, but anyway, verse 5, I and all the people who are with me will approach the city. And when they come out against us as before, we shall flee from them. They will come out after us until we have drawn away from the city. And for they will say, they are fleeing from us as before. And while we flee from them, you shall rise up from the ambush and seize the city. For the Lord your God will give it to you, give it into your hand. And when you have taken the city, you shall set fire, doing as the Lord ordered. See, as I have commanded you. So Joshua set them out, and they went out to the place of ambush, and they lay between Bethel and Ai, to the west of Ai. But Joshua spent the night in the camp. In the morning, Joshua rose early and mustered the people. And they went up with the elders of Israel before the people to Ai, and all the fighting men who were with them. And they went up and they draw near to before the city, and they camped on the north side of Ai, with the ravine between them and Ai. Taking about 5,000 men. Some of these numbers and some of the geography, there's problem. If you read like some of the different things about it, you find different little nuances that are funky in it. And so this is why I make the comment. Some of the details aren't as important in that sense, but they are to create a picture for us to sink into the story. Because we're supposed to be a part of this story. This story is our story in some ways. This is our history. This is how our lore works and functions for us. Okay? So don't get caught up if there's different little discrepancies. And those are conversations we can have later. But all the fighting men who went in there up with him, then they drew before the city and they camped on the north side of Ai, in the ravine between them and Ai. Verse 12, taking about 5,000 men, he set them in ambush between Bethel and Ai, to the west of the city. So they stationed the forces, the main encampment to the north of the city, and its rear guard to the west. But Joshua spent the night in the valley. And when the king of Ai saw this, he and all the people and the inhabitants of the city hurried out early in the morning to meet to the meeting place facing Arabah to meet Israel in battle. But he did not know that there was an ambush against him behind the city. And Joshua and all of Israel made a pretense that they were being beaten as before. Put a note on that. And they fled in the direction of the wilderness so that all the people who were in the city were called together to pursue them. And they pursued Joshua and they were drawn away from the city. And not a man was left in Ai or Bethel who did not go after Israel. So they probably had some alliance. And there's a chance that when Joshua was coming into the land even, when the Israelites were coming into Jericho, that the people of Ai, because it was a small fort, right? Like, so they probably called in Bethel to help and, you know, like, hey, we've got people coming in. So they have this alliance that's probably triggered. So they've got two cities now that are coming against them. And there wasn't a man left in Ai or Bethel, in verse 17, who did not go after Israel. And they left open the city, and they pursued Israel. And the Lord said to Joshua, stretch out the sword. Some of you guys might have a different translation. What?
Javelin.
Spear. Spear, right? A spear. So it's this weird sort of thing. And some possibilities of this, it's interesting, is that Egypt, it might be a symbol that they would use in Egypt. It declared power. It declared kingdomship. This is our domain. So it's interesting that there's this possibility that the commentator was saying that there's this idea that domain, that we're taking this as he holds this thing up. It also gives you an idea of what? What do you guys remember from Moses? Do you remember him holding up his hands? Right? So they notice all of the symbolism is very similar to Moses. They're really recasting the Moses story and putting Joshua in them in it. It's a really cool way to kind of heighten it, because Moses is this awesome figure and this awesome hero. So, but anyway, he holds this sword up, and that's the symbol for them to do what? What verse are we in?
18.
He holds the sword in your hand and toward Ai, for I will give it to you into your hand. And Joshua stretched out the sword into his hand toward the city. And soon he stretched out his hand, and the troops in ambush rose quickly out of their place, and they rushed forward, and they entered the city, and they took it, and at once set the city on fire. And when the men of Ai looked back, the smoke of the city was rising to the sky, and they had no power to flee this way or that, for the people who fled to the wilderness turned back against the pursuers. And when Joshua and all of Israel saw that the ambush had taken the city and that the smoke of the city was rising, they turned back and they struck down the men of Ai and the others that came out from the city against them. So they were surrounded by the Israelites, some on one side and some on the other, and the Israel struck them down until there was no one who survived or escaped. But the king of Ai was taken alive and brought to Joshua. And when Israel had finished slaughtering all of the inhabitants, this is a gruesome thing, isn't it? This is hard to stomach, that this is our God ordering this. Sometimes we don't understand what God's doing. Sometimes you'll listen and you'll read, and there's different commentaries that try and soften this and try and make this so that it's more palatable for us to hear and to listen to. But sometimes we have to commit to the process. We have to trust God. What we learned from chapter 7, if nothing else, is we cannot impugn his character. We cannot question who he is and what his intentions are. I suggested last week, if you were here, that I am not anywhere near allowed to go take Jasmine's picture and start smashing it, right? That is her art. That's what she did. We're the image of Christ, right? I can't do that, but if Jasmine wants to take it and say, I'm done, I don't like it, I want to try again, she's allowed to do that. She's allowed to take her art and do something else with it. And that is hard for us to hear. I can't hurt you, but God can do as he chooses because he knows what he's doing, and it's his domain, it's his world, it's his kingdom. And we have to commit to the process no matter how uncomfortable and how frustrating and how painful it might be and how awkward it is to try and explain away the character of our God. We try to do that too, don't we? We try to make apologies for him and try, you know, he's really not this way or that way. And all we do is wreck it for people because they expect something from God that's not real. Don't we? This life is not easy. It is simple, but it is not easy to follow our Lord. And God says, my character, I can take care of myself. You need to follow me. You pursue me. You do as I say, and we'll figure out the rest. Let me figure that out, right? And when Israel had finished slaughtering all the inhabitants of Ai in the open wilderness, where they pursued them, and all of them, to the very last, had fallen on the edge of the sword. All of Israel returned to Ai and attacked it with the edge of the sword. The total of those who fell that day, both men and women, were 12,000, and all the people of Ai. For Joshua did not draw back his hand from which he stretched it out, the sword, until he had utterly destroyed all the inhabitants of Ai. Only the livestock and the spoil of that city Israel took as their booty, according to the word of the Lord that he had issued Joshua. So Joshua burned Ai and made it forever a heap of ruins, as it is to this day. And he hanged the king of Ai on a tree until evening. And at sunset, Joshua commanded that they took his body down from the tree, and they threw it at the entrance of the gate and raised over it a heap of stones, which stands to this day. Going back to chapter 7, the only way that they knew that something was wrong is when they started losing the battle. Right? We as the reader know because they gave us the little heading that going into it, that it's because of Achan's sin. But as they went in and went up to battle, they trusted that God would be with them. They didn't necessarily know that he wasn't. So often we work and, God, what's your will? What should I do in my life? What should I do? But really what we're supposed to do is act. We're supposed to engage. You have orders. Our standing orders are go. Make disciples of all men. It says as you go. So there's people all around you that you can be engaging to make disciples, teaching them to obey his word, baptizing them. We're going to get to baptize people. That's going to be cool coming up. But unless you hear God stop or tell you to do something different, you've got to trust that what you're supposed to do, he's going to be with you. You have to do that. You can't account for somebody else's sin in that situation. You have to commit to the process. I remember John sharing at men's group, you know, when the Vikings would come, I think I've shared this already a couple times, but when the Vikings would come and attack a land, right, attack an island or whatever, they would burn the boats. Why would you do that? Why would you burn the boats? There's nowhere else to go. You're going to win this or you're going to die, right? And so much of our culture, as we sit around and hesitate and freeze and just, and we sort of get into it and then we back off and we never really find out what the Lord was going to do, what miracle he might have, how he's going to show up. And then oftentimes when he does show up, like he did in chapter 7, we don't like how he shows up, do we? Now, you need to cut that out. You need to expel all sin. We like to soften that too, don't we? Oh, well, that's the God of the Old Testament. New Testament, he says, cut your hand off if it causes you to sin. Pull out your eye if it causes you to sin. That's New Testament Jesus. We are to be holy and righteous at all costs, aren't we? And we're to commit to it. We're to engage it and push through. And sometimes we're wrong. Sometimes we're dead wrong, and it costs other people. And we make mistakes, and we lead people into places where, ooh, I shouldn't have done that, right? Or we can do all of those kind of things. But the thing that I look at when I was reading through this, and it was awesome to compare it when I was talking to Miranda, how did they win the victory? What strategy did God use to defeat Ai? What was his strategy? He tricked the people of Ai to believe that Israel was running from them. And why did that work? Because they did it before. They thought that the first time. So what does God do? He creates victory out of their failure. God is the God about redemption in ways that you will have no idea. He will create victory out of things that you had no clue that he was going to do. The trick is, will you commit to the process? Will you stay in it? Will you fight all the way through? In verse 30 of chapter 8, it says, Joshua built a mount on Ebal, on the altar of the Lord and God of Israel, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the Israelites. And as it was written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of unhewn stones on which no iron tool had been used, and they had offered to burn offerings to the Lord, and they sacrificed offerings of well-being. And there in the presence of the Israelites, Joshua wrote on the stones a copy of the law of Moses. You can almost picture the Ten Commandments again, right? It's just this imagery of just solidifying that these are God's people. These are God's people, this covenant. These are the way that this is what makes them Israel. And all of Israel, alien as well as citizen, with their elders and their officers and their judges, stood on the opposite side of the ark in front of the Levitical priests who carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord. half of them in front of Mount Gerizim, and half of them in the front of in front of Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded at the first, that they should bless the people of Israel. And afterwards, he read all of the words of the law. This is our God's law, the blessings and the curses, according to the way, all of that that was written in the book of the law. And there was not a word of all that Moses commanded that Joshua did not read before the assembly of Israel, and the women and the little ones and the aliens who resided among them. There are things that have happened in your life that were not your fault, that you didn't do to yourself, that were done to you. And God is about redemption. He will heal you. He will bring about a full and complete purification if you stay in it, if you walk it through. And the cool thing about it is he will use those things to bring about redemption, not only in you, but in other people. We get to work and be a part of this thing because of some of the things that he has done in our lives, because of some of the tragedy and the brokenness that happened to us. We're going to spend some time. If I could have the worship team come forward. And I want to ask you to not grovel in those things that have been done, not be stuck in those, but fix it. Make a shift, change, hand it over to the Lord. As Miranda talked about, bringing the box up. If you got to write it down, there's paper and pens back there. If you want prayer, Sue and Karen and the prayer team, we'll just say that, the prayer team, the Hendrons and Sue, are they pray every Thursday night. If you want to be prayed for, they will pray for you if you want to write a clear prayer. But if you just want to write something down and really concretely put that thing at the foot of the cross, and let's see what God does it for you, today's the day to do that. Let's spend some time. And if you've already put it there and you've already experienced the victory, which so many of us have, then let's just spend some time and just say thank you. Go over those things that God has done in your life. There will be elders over here if you want physical prayer. But yeah, we'll spend a few minutes in that, and then Wes Warner will give us the benediction in a couple of songs, okay? Miranda, you want to let him know when? Wes is going to give the benediction, so just, you know, when you're...